attending in Pretoria. So those are the three apologies I've received so far. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable members, may we have the apologies? Can we get a proposal and a second for the acceptance of all the apologies?
I move for acceptance, Chairperson.
Honourable Member, my follow proposals and Honourable Members, 20 seconds. In terms of the agenda, Honourable Members, we only have one item on the agenda, and that is the consideration of the strategic and just addition and the annual performance plan and the budget vote of the Department of Social Development. So we will be looking at those documents today. We have the delegation of social development led by the Director General of Social Development. We don't see the CEO of SASA here today, but I'm sure that you do have senior management of SASA.
I'm afraid not, Chairperson. They are not here. Both the NDA and SASA are not here.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah, it's separate.
Because we will have separate hearings.
Yes, yes, I do apologize for that. Honourable members, that's the one item for consideration today. Is there any item that you'd like to add at this stage? None? Thank you very much. Without wasting any more time, I'll then give over to the Director General. Advocate Lucy Madonsela to take us through the presentation. Over to you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, we've prepared a presentation which we believe will meet the requirements as set out in the invitation. And the presentation will be divided into two parts. The second part being the financial information, which Mr. Fakade, the Chief Finance Officer of the Department, will speak to. The first part is, in fact, the part that deals with the strategic overview of the Department, and that will be presented by Mr. Roger Slachwayo, the Chief Director of Strategy in the Department. With your permission, Madam Chair, let me invite him to give the presentation. Roger.
Thank you, DG. Thanks to the Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, for the opportunity once more to engage with you on the strategic plan and the annual performance plan of the Department. As the DG has indicated, I'll just run through the introduction, the strategic thrust, and focus our attention on the annual outputs and targets as expressed in the APP, and then Mr. Pakade will deal with the rest of the finances. The purpose is just to present to the Portfolio Committee the Department's overview that encompasses the vision, mission, mandate, and strategic priorities, and our commitment for the year 2012-13. The vision remains pretty much the same, which is to build a caring society or systems of social development that facilitate human development with an aim of improving quality of life for South Africans or citizens. But also we do this in partnership with various stakeholders. We work with NGOs, we work with public sector, private sector institutions that are committed to building this environment for sustainable development and in delivering also integrated and quality services to our people. That's pretty much our mission. The mandate for the department is derived from the Constitution and we exist to provide also sector-wide national leadership in social development. So we work closely, obviously, with provinces and all the parties that are involved in the social protection agenda of government. I thought I should, you know, go through the structure to indicate how we organize, so that it gives a bit of context to maybe members that may be new to the committee. The department has a number of branches, the first branch being the strategy and governance, the finance branch, the corporate branch, social policy, comprehensive social security, integrated development, and welfare services. Just to give a bit of details in each branch, the strategy and governance branch is the one that drives strategic management component of the department. It fosters operational efficiency throughout the various levels of government, national, provincial, and local, but also just making sure that we work closely with our entities in tandem. Also, it oversees other boards that the department works closely with and deal with issues of monitoring and evaluation across the sector. Then there is a branch, finance and corporate services, which exists largely to provide the admin support to the ministry, the overall department as it relates to finances and how we engage with the parliament, parliamentary questions and all other oversight issues are also facilitated from these branches as well. Our social policy division provides strategic guidance on social policy development across government, but also coordination and evaluation. We also focus a lot in terms of capacity building on evidence-based training as it relates to social policy. We want our policies and legislations to be driven by evidence, and this is where the work generally works, happens in this particular branch. As most of you would know, that we have comprehensive social security, which is basically one of the biggest in terms of budget size. This is where we drive the work, policy work, that guides what happens at SASA level, but also just the social insurance work, which is the second leg of comprehensive social security program, is being dealt with from this particular program. Then there's integrated development, which drives largely your community development-related work, and largely our welfare services, which has a number of legislations resident in this particular branch, from Children's Act, Older Persons Act. I thought maybe just to walk you through that might be very useful context. The strat plan and the APP were guided by the minister as we formulated the documents, and she specifically highlighted key priorities for this coming year and perhaps the remainder of the term, which is to promote early childhood development, and secondly, to expand child and youth care services and anti-substance abuse, provision of food to poor households. We have a program called Food for All. So these are the critical priority areas based on the research, based on her observation as she does the constituency work as well. But also, when you look into various legislations that we've written, we would want to begin to make a meaningful change in the lives of South African children. So you see its bias towards children. We think we can make the biggest difference as we actually enter at that point of intervention. Looking at the early childhood development in terms of the strategic objective is to improve services to children in their first 1,000 days from birth by providing access to ECD to those children that are eligible, or particularly poor children, but also taking advantage of that to also deal with some of the nutrition issues or food security issues for children. The outcome of this is to have an improved access to ECD programs, but also improved quality of ECD services. This is what we want to see as a result, but more so the cognition. collective, the social development of children, it's more critical outcomes that we would want to begin to look at. This particular priority is linked to the broader outcomes of government. The specific one is a quality basic education, but also a long and healthy life for all South Africans. We believe that we'll be able to contribute to the macro priority areas through this particular area that the minister has picked on. The second priority, the department would want to strengthen the child's protection services through the implementation of the child's care and protection measures over the MTEF, and I'll get into details with each priority in the next few slides. But the idea to focus around this protection of children, particularly vulnerable ones, is to create a safe and friendly society for children in South Africa. We know the stage of child abuse in South Africa, but also we believe that it will contribute towards a situation where people would feel safe in our country. On the anti-substance abuse, the strategic objective is to reduce the incidence, in particular, of substance abuse in communities by providing treatment and prevention. So we have a dual strategy around it. So we will continue to pursue the two elements. But it is our desire to push more for prevention because it's less expensive as we educate our people around the dangers of substance abuse. The outcome is reduced social ills associated with substance abuse, because we realize that if this is dealt with, we're most likely to arrest other social ills as well. And the last one, obviously, the objective is to facilitate and monitor the implementation of food for all programs. The outcome is improved access to diverse, nutritious, and affordable food to poor households. This contributes towards outcome number 7, which is vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities contributing towards food security for all. And the targets would be largely towards rural areas in most of these outcomes. I thought I should put this well, which basically highlights, in my computer, I think it contrasted nicely, the 4 priorities that I've just read out: food security, ECD, child and youth care, and anti-substance abuse. These are the apex priorities of the minister. But the minister is particularly also concerned about, our support to NGOs. We believe that NGOs remain very, very, very key in terms of our service delivery chain and model. We'd want to continue supporting NGOs because our delivery partners. But also working closely with communities where we close the gap between policy and implementation. We have a program called Taking DSD to People, which the minister would want to begin to institutionalize, where we can consult directly with communities on matters that affect them. So this is being championed by her and the deputy minister, which I think would bring more life and vibrancy in our plans. Families, it's one of the critical cornerstones for society or community development. We'll be working in this space. Social assistance, we have done successfully, worked well around social assistance. We want to begin to look at the gaps, particularly where there may be particular groups that are not receiving services that we want to make sure that we reach out to them. But also use that opportunity to link social assistance with broader macroeconomic debate in the country that as read out in the State of the National Address. Youth and older persons would be some of the areas that receive their attention. So I think this, done well, would constitute, the critical pillars of our strategic planning document. As I've indicated, that I'll just maybe read quickly, that under ECD priority, the focus will be on provision of quality ECD by raising subsidies to levels that will support cognitive, social and physical development of the child. I think we'd want to be remembered as a department that has made a difference in that respect. Policy measures to make ECD a public good. We've been observing with keen interest that ECDs are largely, and the services taking place under environments that are not conducive for development of children. We're talking about garages, headquarters and other places would want to begin to look at that and see how we can begin to facilitate education of children at that age cohort, and obviously will address the social infrastructure related to ECD going forward. Child and youth care, in taking advantage of the youth vouch and unlocking the potential of children and youth, the department will expand its welfare services in the area of child and youth care services. We'll be using the ECBINDI model. The model has proven to be effective in addressing the needs of orphans, vulnerable children through the appointment of child and youth care workers who provide direct support to children in their homes and at community level through safe parks and life skills programs. It is estimated that when we have fully rolled out this past over 3 years, you know, we should be able to reach about 1.3 million children you know, who would receive supervision and psychosocial support from the child and youth care workers. We think this is going to help us deal with the shortage of social workers or begin to close some of the service gaps through community mobilization engagement. Additional efforts will be on youth development through engagement on youth leadership programs. We will be focusing largely in areas where we have not been able to reach. Rural areas would be some of the critical points for targets in terms of youth development. We'll be also looking at youth development for youth at risk who are already in the in some of the centers that we have. And we'll also be looking, obviously, at CSG primary caregivers, the mothers and fathers of children who are in receipt of child support grant, who are able-bodied that can be assisted in terms of employment opportunities. On the anti-substance abuse, as I've said, the aim is to educate our population on the dangers of abusing substances. We'll be looking at various policies that will bring coherence on how government deals with alcohol and illicit drugs. We believe this will assist us with dealing with social events. On food security to poor households, would improve access to food in those households that are experiencing hunger, but also we'll be working closely with the Department of Agriculture, Human Rural Development, and other sister departments, just to make sure that our efforts, come together, and be able to assist our poor communities. I think there's a lot of work being done in this area, already at the ministerial level, to coordinate this area. Let me now then go into details, because I was just more high level. So I'd now go into output and annual targets per program. So these are the areas that the committee can hold more accountable on, you know, in terms of the delivery. Looking at social security, social assistance, which is under program two, will expand the coverage of child support grants or child support benefits for children 0 to 4 years old over the MTF, and the specific target is to extend CSG coverage to 66% by March 2012. So we've noticed that this band, you know, we have not been able to, you know, reach out all the children who are eligible. So we're reaching out, and this is partly also in support of the minister's priority to focus on children. Contribute towards the reduction of income poverty by providing income support to old age grant beneficiaries. The specific target is to take it to about 2.8 million, and child support grant will be taken overall to about 11.4 million by March 2030. Social security also, the objective is to ensure uniformity in social security provision by 2015. This relates to our social insurance related work. We'll be focusing on consultation and finalization of the policy on mandatory retirement, birth and disability benefits by March 2013. Establishment of Social Security Policy Department. We believe that if we need to begin to harmonize various policies around social insurance across government, and a department might just be an appropriate vehicle to do that. CSG primary caregivers will be profiled, about 6,000 linked to economic opportunities by 2015. This is an area that we're really exploring, and we need the support of the committee as well, if there would be some ideas around this. But more specifically, we would have a comprehensive database of profile CSU primary caregivers by March 2013, and 2,000 of CSU primary caregivers linked to economic opportunities by 2014. And the aspects around Social Security that deals with appeal, the objective is to ensure the provision of access to internal remedies to applicants and beneficiaries of social access by 31st March 2014. And the specific target is 90% of lodge appeals must be adjudicated within 90 days of receipt. I think we're doing well in that particular space. We want to continue to maintain the performance. Establishment of Social Security Policy Department, I've already touched on that. On the inspectorate, which is also still part of the program 2 and 3, which is Social Security related, is to establish an inspectorate for social security for the maintenance of the integrity of social assistance framework and system by March 2015. Inspectorate program management unit will be established at least in this coming year, which will oversee the whole establishment process, including the research activities that are needed in that space. We'll commission a study to comprehensively review the current social security legislation and maybe deliver a comprehensive report, quantitative and qualitative, on the current levels of social assistance, fraud, leakage, and misconduct. I think now I need to move on to program 4, which is welfare services. Under welfare services, the objective is to improve the quality of welfare services by implementing the welfare services framework for the social work profession in the sector by March 2015. I think interesting work that maybe the committee should be watching and hopefully maybe make inputs to is that the department will be commissioning the comprehensive evaluation study on the state of welfare services in the country by March. That particular work now. So we'd expect NGOs to come make presentations, various stakeholders that are working within this particular field. We need to understand fully the scope, the magnitude of the problems, if any, there, so that as we look forward, we can plan better and respond effectively to the needs of our people. We'll be appointing the commissioners to head the inquiry into the state of welfare services this year. We'll also be conducting impact evaluation scholarship programs by March 2017. That's been running. The second objective is improve sector support to social development stakeholders and statutory bodies and NGOs. We'll facilitate the approval of the policy on social service professions by March 2013. Develop a monitoring and evaluation system of funded NPOs by 2014. I think this is an area that the committee has been watching as well with keen interest on the monitoring side. So we'll be conducting a scoping exercise towards the development of MNE framework for funded NPOs by March 2013. Rollout of the National Implementation Plan on the Policy on Financial Awards to Service Providers. This is in part in support of the NGO area. We will also create an environment that enables protection and promotion of older persons' rights. In this particular case, we will just try and bring all the activities around old age in line with the new Act. So 90 community-based care and support services will be fully registered in terms of the Act, 206 residential facilities registered in terms of the new Older Persons Act as well. So both community and residential care or facilities would get more focus. We'll host 9 provincial and 1 additional and 1 national older persons parliament. So this is in part to promote their rights, protect and promote the rights of people with disabilities. We'll facilitate an approval of a policy and draft bill on social development services to people with disabilities. Train 45 senior managers. 6 middle managers on disability mainstreaming by 2013. And now getting back to ECD again under welfare services program is to improve the services for ECD, and particularly here is to increase access to early childhood development programs for children between 0 and school-going age by 10% in 2012-13. Registered partial care facilities increased by 10% by March 2013. Another objective is to establish the condition and services provided to children in ECD services. So we'll be auditing ECDs in the country this coming year. So we'll conduct a comprehensive audit of about 5,487. This will be done over 2 years. I think we'll take the first 5,000 this year. We'll take the remainder next year. So we want to understand two things. We want to understand the services that are provided in each city ECD. Secondly, we need to understand the infrastructure condition under which ECD takes place. We believe this will help this plan better. Strengthen the child protection services through the implementation of child care and protection measures over the NTF. The specific target there would be to improve access to child care and protection through alternative care services. 5% increase in the number of children accessing adoption services by March 2013. 10% increase in the number of children accessing foster care. 15% increase in the number of children accessing drop-in centers. And also a 10% increase in the number of children accessing child and youth care services. Another objective at the welfare services is to strengthen the child protection service through its same, pretty much same objective, is to increase the number of employees working with children that are screened against the child protection register. 4,000 employees working with children are screened against the child. I think that's pretty much the target that we have for 2012-13. Initial implementation of the CBND model will establish the project management office for the initial rollout of the CBND model. I think there's work already in provinces on the rollout of the CBND. So this is just to a corresponding support from national around ECBND, which is actually happening in the provinces. And promote and strengthen families in South Africa, as I've indicated on the big wheel. The objective is to facilitate the approval of the white paper on families by March 2013. Family development programs should be implemented, capacity building on the integrated parenting framework in all provinces by March 2013. Then maybe towards the last of the programs, sub-programs under welfare services to reduce the incidence of social crime through capacity building and monitoring of programs and policy implementation by provinces. The specific targets under social crime would be to train 360 professional practitioners and service providers on social crime prevention programs. Focus on the accreditation of diversion services and minimum norms and standards by March 2013. Monitor the implementation of the National Integrated Social Crime Prevention Strategy Action Plan by all provinces and monitor the implementation of the social crime prevention programs in all the provinces. We'll also improve the provision of victim empowerment services in all provinces by 2015. Specifically for 2013, it's a draft legislation on victim empowerment services. We'll also facilitate the implementation of gender-based violence prevention programs in 9 provinces. Develop and pilot the accreditation system on anti-human trafficking in 13 shelters nationwide by March 2013. Another objective is to reduce the incidence of substance abuse in communities by providing treatment and prevention services. And here we'll facilitate the implementation of the National Anti-Substance Abuse Program of Action, which has been approved by Cabinet. And reduce the incidence of substance abuse in communities. Again, say the deliverables would be to finalize and facilitate approval of regulations for the prevention of and treatment for Substance Abuse Act. Facilitate the approval of capacity building of the treatment model, develop social mobilization strategy to facilitate the implementation of substance abuse campaigns. So we'll be driving national campaigns around this particular area. And also the approval of the National Drug Master Plan. And now I change focus to the last program, which is community development. The objective there is to support and monitor the implementation of community development services and programs. We'll train about 580 community development practitioners. Capacity building of 300 community-based organizations on community development. would want to professionalize the space around community development, pretty much like we have it in the welfare services environment. So we would have some existence of community development occupational framework by March 2013, facilitate approval of the establishment of community development association. So this association hopefully would draw professionals who would be able to advise the department and the sector as a whole on community development matters. Support and monitor the implementation of community development services and programs. Would want to profile 200,000 households in 100 wards by March 2013. Placement of 100 change agents in wards by March 2014. Mobilization of 100 communities in 100 wards. So this will be really working with provinces. A lot of the implementation will happen at the provincial level, but we thought maybe we can indicate some of the activities there. Facilitate and monitor the implementation of Food for All programs in support of the priority of the minister will be to promote equitable access to food for about 200,000 households by March 2013. And on the non-profit organization, the objective there is to create a conducive environment for civil society organizations and communities to do their work around social development space. We'll focus on efficient registration and regulatory framework on nonprofit organization, processing 90% of all nonprofit organizations' applications within 2 months. We think if we bring more of the players on board, we'll be able to deliver quickly. Develop an NPO online registration. It's an effort to simplify some of the perceived red tapes that currently exist. Set up an efficient walk-in centers at national. People can walk in and we deal with them as it relates to NGOs. Facilitate the number of approval of the policy on NPO regulatory framework, and 80% of NPO appeals adjudication within three months of receipt. That would be our target that we want to maintain. We'd want to also enhance capacity of provinces and organizations on NPO governance, compliance. Part of the reason why sometimes we're unable to transfer money on time, to NGOs, it's related to capacity to account for the resources. So we want to begin to just work around it so that we're able to support NGOs better. Train 1,500 NPOs on governance. Train 200 provincial officials on NPO governance and NPO acts. So if not, it's more really of support to provinces. Special projects and innovation. This is one of the key programs that assist the department in increasing work opportunities, skills, and income levels in the social sector. So basically, it addresses the unemployment, the third aspect of the triple challenge of our time. And will create about or facilitate the creation of about 187 work opportunities through social sector sub-programs by March 2013. We just came out from the conference now around this particular area. Promote community-driven development. We'll extend the community works program to 151 sites in municipalities. Roll out Gwanda program to at least one site in each province by 2012-13. You'd remember the popular television program Gwanda. This is something that we want to upscale across provinces. Provide social protection to military veterans. About 2,000 military veterans will access social risks of distress, psychosocial, and economic support. So we want to make sure that they benefit from our programs. I would stop here in terms of the performance targets and hand over to Mr. Pagadi to deal with the financial outlook of the department.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable members, morning. My name is Thotsebo Phakade. I'm quite an old guard in the department. Chair, I guess the next question that the members will ask after Mr. Kachwayo's presentation would be whether, in fact, we do have what it takes to implement all these outputs. I will then touch on the financial resources, Chair, over the MTF quickly. It's not a very long presentation. It's just to give a sense of whether, in fact, the funding that has been announced recently in the budget speech does also dovetail what the expectations are in terms of service delivery. We have had quite a positive response from Treasury and finally from the Cabinet in terms of the bids that we submitted last year. Obviously, we don't get everything that we aspire to get, but we have, if you look at the slide that I've shown there, we covered critical areas, although I must say we would have loved to get more funding, but from the National Department side, the key priorities that have been agreed to by the sector, that is services to children, victim empowerment, and substance abuse, they have fairly been covered in terms of funding. From the National Department, we received funding. One of the challenges that we had was the oversight responsibility, which is some over our entities, which is something that the AG has raised, and we made promises even at the Public Accounts Committee that we will look into this matter. So one of the things we wanted to look into is to understand our responsibility with regard to operational oversight, especially for SASA, because SASA commands the biggest of our budget. And the three areas that we want to strengthen there is the internal audit unit within the department, which will cooperate with the audit unit of SASA. We will be doing our own tests and also follow up on the findings and reports that are produced by the internal audit of SASA, especially when it comes to grant administration and the area that has always been challenging us and leading us to now lately qualified audits. There has been quite significant improvement, but we are hoping that by the end of this financial year, we will have quite a good report following the implementation of the action plan that SASA has put in place. We've also firming up the oversight in terms of support of the implementation of policies and also monitoring the norms and standards via our policy unit, Social Security Policy Unit. And lastly, we're also looking at governance issues. We're strengthening that element as well, which will include also financial oversight in terms of the spending on both the transfer money, which is the big funds, as well as the administration budget. Therefore, those are the allocations we had. I think Mr. Kashwayo indicated also that we will be conducting early childhood development audits of all those centers throughout the country, and we also got some allocation of 40.9 million over the MTF. And on victim empowerment, we have set aside 21.1 million. You will recall that Minister of Finance also announced 36 million as well as 41 million for provincial departments as part of the 1.4 billion that he announced for funding the priorities of social development. That is over and above ECD and child care and child and youth care, which is the CBND. We also must say that provinces have also made certain commitments, especially on BEP, because they have topped up that money that they received quite significantly, which is a very positive step. We also have requested money for the program management office that Mr. Kashwayo referred to for ECBND, which will set up at national from this next financial year, and then we'll sustain that over the MTF period. So we have started with 18 million in terms of developing the core capacity there within welfare services. The other money, which I think the improvement of conditions of service is a cut across the department, is just to ensure that the inflationary adjustment of salaries. The money that has also been added, this is not what is available. This is over and above what we had in last year's baseline, that is the 2011 estimates of expenditure. So we got additional money over and above that. So we actually had 30 million more for expediting the establishment of the inspectorate. The work has started. We do have a dedicated program manager at the National Department now who's running with this establishment process. And the first phase would focus on review of legislation and all other policy framework to ensure synergy between what is currently in place and what the Social Assistance Act provides for under the establishment of the inspectorate. Well, there's something called efficiency savings, which is a more polite way of referring to budget cuts. Some few amounts were taken out from all the departments. So we were also affected by that on the baseline. So your bottom line totals show the net effect of the additional allocation to the national department. In the same vein, we have received additional allocation, as I said, the 1.4 billion announced by Minister of Finance for provincial departments. We have, since the allocations were given to us, as well as the announcement by Minister of Finance, been interacting with the provincial counterparts. We have had, over the last 2 weeks, very important sessions, starting with a CFO forum meeting where we unpacked the provincial budget just to trace this money and make sure that it's secured, it is indeed been allocated appropriately to the appropriate sub-program under child protection and care. And following that, we had a workshop with the heads of social development. That was also followed by a bilateral meeting with the National Treasury. I think the important thing essentially here, we're pushing an agenda now that says we have had our lessons before and we want to be very, very sure that this money is indeed available. The challenge we're still facing now, Chair and the members, is that this money is part of the equitable share to the provinces. So it is not earmarked funds, per se. So we're trying to negotiate if we could have some way of securing this money so that we don't find it reprioritized to other key urgent priorities within provinces so that we know it is indeed going to lend itself into those programs. And that process is unfolding. We'll be giving a feedback to MINMEC on Thursday and Friday this week. The SAFA budget, as Mr. Kachwayo might have indicated, there will be additional allocation in the main to fund the benefits that will be paid to refugees in terms of the new policy change. I would say it's a policy change because it's now an obligation that has been determined that refugees should be able to benefit from the benefits if they are in the country legally. Improvement of conditions as well for SAFA, but there has been adjustments to the SAFA baseline. The members will recall that over the last 2 years at least, SAFA has had significant savings on the transfer payments, and one of the biggest reasons for this is that the projections that were given were, in fact, the 1.4 billion sounds big because it's SAFA budget, but it's just about 1%. Not more than 1% of the total 104 billion that is available there. So if you look at that, we've now, because of the stringent, or rather the tight pace, Treasury has indicated that the strategies that are adopted by SASA coupled with the savings projected on the administration budget driven by the new payment model that SASA is going to be implementing over the medium term, will ensure that two things happen. SASA pay back the deficit that has been accumulated over the last 3 or 4 years, and they are quite advanced in that because we were expecting that this year, if not the entire deficit is wiped off by the new financial year, it will be wiped off. And this was the deal that we struck with Treasury, that we will be able to pay back that money. So on the grants as well, you'll notice that in year three, there is an additional 600 million added because we're projecting that the take-up rates will at that year be significant to warrant an additional allocation in terms of the projection model. NDA,
is also got some view cards. There was no additional allocation for the NDA. They have raised this issue sharply with us. We have had a meeting with the chair of the board, with the DG, and we are working on the processes that will ensure that the NDA in the long run is appropriately funded. One of the things that are going to be main, which also in principle have been discussed and agreed to in principle at NIMEC, is to position NDA in such a way that it deals with the challenge that Rogers raised about capacity of NGOs, because part of their mandate is to improve or rather build the capacity of civil society organizations. So we will be working very close with them to ensure that they assist us in firstly improving our grant-making processes with capacity building as well as the monitoring of the NGOs, which is a big challenge at the provincial level. This is just a summary of what I've just said, indicating all the allocations over and above the baseline, as well as the adjustment that we made to baseline by the Treasury. I think I've touched on this. This slide is just showing which of the amounts that we have are earmarked amounts. Earmarked amounts meaning that those amounts cannot be utilized for other purposes. You will see, for instance, things like social assistance transfers. You can't, unless you come back to Parliament and ask for authority, you cannot utilize that via a environment, which is very, very critical. Budget allocations, that's the growth trends that are showing there, which is an average of about 7.6% on the total budget. And this is how the budget has been broken down by program at the national level. And you can see the biggest slice goes to Program 2, which is social assistance transfers to SASA, as well as Program 3, which basically is the administration budget for SASA, which is basically utilized for managing and administering the grants. And then we also have a bigger slice going to welfare services, which is our main program now in the department, and then integrated development and social policy and other programs that are under that, which is governance and strategy. And then by economic classification, you will see the budget broken down 345 total in 14-15, 317 for goods and services, and 129 for transfers and subsidies, and 6.6 for payment of capital assets. Members will notice that in terms of our asset management and replacement plan, we will have quite a significant decrease next year on the assets budget, because we have replaced a lot. It's more mainly the IT equipment. We have renewed our IT equipment significantly this year. We've also deployed equipment on security measures within the building. So next year and the outer year, we're not envisaging bulk of new assets, except to replace, I mean rather to buy assets for new employees, as well as to maintain your normal usual maintenance of the existing ones. This is the breakdown of our major transfers. I thought it would be important to share with the committee this slide, because often the transfer payments have got a particular significant purpose. Other than the SASA transfers, you have social work bursaries, which is a partnership or a scheme that we implement via the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, which funds the social workers who are in a serious shortage in the sector, being a scarce skill. The targets are still far to reach, but we do have challenges that we are busy discussing at a minimum level to address this issue. We have also had a very serious engagement with Treasury around the issue of social workers. I think the main is more on the strategy to ensure that they are evenly distributed across the country and they are able to get appropriate location as they qualify in their studies. Love Life, we still maintain that program. I think the members are quite aware of the Love Life program. The NDA, that's the allocation over the MTF. which grows up to 182 million in the outer year. The National Council are those national bodies that we fund that deal with various services relating to people with disability, drugs, substance abuse, cancer, and all that. Then there are other small funds that we transfer as membership fees. We do have membership like the International Social Security Organization and so, or rather association and so on. This is the picture of the, our operational budget, which grows by 13% and plateaus over the MTF. And in terms of the breakdown program, you see the allocation is given to program 3, program 4, and program 5. We've eliminated program 2 because it's just transfers to SASA. So this is the operational budget now, excluding the major transfers, which is quite a modest budget. That's a breakdown of the budget per each of the programs, which is self-explanatory there. But other than administration, the biggest slice you'll see it goes to welfare as well as social security policy, and lastly to the social policy and integrated development. Then that's your breakdown, the economic classification, and Chairperson, that in the main the priorities they are funded in the budget and as they were presented by Mr. Kachwayo. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pagare and Mr. Kachwayo. Madam Chair, that concludes our presentation. And as you can see, we are accompanied by a sizable number of senior managers whose areas of focus have been set out in the plan. And we are happy to interact with whatever questions the committee might have at this stage. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much, DG and the team. DG, how many vacancies, funded vacancies, do you have at senior management level in your department?
Madam Chair, I don't have that information at hand. Mr. Webster is here. Do we know how many vacancies at senior level do we have at the moment? I know that the overall vacancy rate is estimated at 9%, but the Chairperson is interested in knowing what is the vacancy rate at senior management level.
Chairperson, our overall vacancy rate currently stands at around 6%. It has come down. This vacancy rate for senior managers, I have asked for that information. I should receive it within the next few minutes, and then I can...
Follow-up question. If I look at your delegation, it's predominantly male. In terms of your gender breakdown, could maybe your human resources manager just work on that for us a lot, just to give us a gender breakdown per level, just up to director.
We will certainly do that, Madam Chair. Thank you. Okay. Mr. Webster?
Yeah, I just want to get clarity. Is that the gender breakdown on S&S level, not below S&S level? Okay, on S&S level, we have 47% female representation currently, 47%.
Thank you, honourable members. The floor is yours. Honourable member Mafolo Gaba Tswete Waters Pula. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation.
I think you have started with a very important question to ask about senior vacancy rate on senior management and the gender representation. I was just going to ask you to follow that question of yours, that maybe we'll be seeing women are in senior management only to find that they are assistant director, only directors belongs to men. I was just going to ask you if you could, who's senior, who's assistants, and
managers is actually from directors, two directors, DDGs, and then DG. So I'm sure, I don't know if Mr. Webster left, but did you, can we get that breakdown? I'm sure you can give it off a cuff from DG up to director level, so that we can just get the gender breakdown. I think the Honourable Member has a very important point. Okay. You want to continue, Honourable Member?
Chairperson, my question is on slide 15. Yeah, it's on slide 15. On promoting early childhood development. In our constituency, we are faced in a situation. It's a good thing, so we reach out, especially children who are qualified to get the grants. But we are remaining with a problem that we see that this child, one of the requirements to get grants is to have a birth certificate. So I just want to ask the department if they are working together with other stakeholders like Home Affairs, Health, Department of Health, so that those people get a registration birth certificate so that they can get that thing. Because if a registration certificate, we can say we want to reach millions of children so that they can get grant, but without them, we can't get them. How are we going to do that? I think let me pause there. And about the anti-substance abuse centers, do we have enough abuse substance centers? Because treatment centers, yeah, because this thing is really killing our nation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chapo, very much, Honorable Member Kala. Okay, thank you, Chapo, and thanks for the presentation from the department. Chair, mine. It will be sticking on the, actually even, Honourable Member, take my mindful about that problem of people who don't have, in my constituency, who don't have a certificate to get grants from their children, okay? Let me move in this one. Mine is to, I'd like to ask the department about the, what SASSA does about the people that have the incident of getting grants because of the doctor's letter. When the professional doctor writes a letter,
so Baba, let me call you to order.
Okay, SASSA, we will be discussing SASSA at a later date, not today.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have any other question?
No, my
let me also thank the department for very informative presentation. I'm looking at all the slides, but there's a lot that you're going to do by March 2013. I don't know how you're going to cope, but every, you know, slide has something that you're going to do on March 2013. Let me come to the two questions. Question number one is slide 35, where you are going to train 360 practitioners and service providers. I'm trying to link with contract workers that we have in most of the communities, whether we are coming up with new training new people or strengthening, because I don't hear you talking about strengthening of people that we have already on the ground, because when we're doing our oversight, there were a lot of people that are not trained that are working in our communities. already, whether when you talk of training people that are going to look after children, you consider those people that are already working. And the other one, Chair, is around, yeah, it's again a slide 38 is talking about training 550 community development practitioners. It's linked to the first question, whether you consider those that you have already on the ground to strengthen those, rather than saying training. We don't talk about strengthening those that we have or training those that we have. We don't have an idea of how many development practitioners that we have right now. So it sounds like you're coming up with new people altogether when you say train 580 community practitioners. But I know that you do have people that already are on the ground. Just to tighten up that one, that we're not talking about new people altogether. Again, slide 41 talks about train 1,500, and it's also linked to that question. Train 200 provincial officials. Whether we have provincial officials that are there already, and we're talking about training those provincial officials. Now, the other one, although I'm not very good at question of finances, but I do see that the money allocated to risk prevention of risk management is on page 26, slide 52. It's talking about prevention, mitigation of disaster risk. And I'm a bit worried about the amount that we have. I'm trying to link that, DG, with the climate change, that we worried about climate change, and it has an impact always to people that respond to climate change. It is Department of Social Development, whether it won't be too small when we talk of 2.3. The last one, Chair, is around the scholarships or social bursaries, where Mr. Pakade spoke about, though you have challenges around bursaries, and you also spoke about evenly distributed across the country. How do you distribute these bursaries? Is it coordinated through national, or you divide it in all provinces? I'm looking at the number of provinces that you might have more need of social workers. What I want to know is whether you give equal money when you talk about evenly distributed across the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Twete, Honourable Member Waters.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I'd like to ask some questions with regard to the ECD on page 9, slide 17. I take it from what was said that there's no norms and minimum norms and standards currently for ECD centres around the country. Is that because you're going to be doing an audit of infrastructure and services, so there's actually no norms and standards. So anybody can open up an ECD centre. You also talked about and provide any particular services. You also talked about trying to get quality ECD services. Are you what you're doing about implementing a curriculum, a minimum curriculum around the country? And are you in contact or negotiations with the Department of Basic Education as far as this is concerned to design and develop a curriculum? And how will you be enforcing this to ensure that it is enforced uniformly across the country? If you can just unpack that, please. And then as far as the anti-substance abuse, I mean, I must say I'm quite depressed because, being here 6 years ago, the same issues are still coming up, particularly with the substance abuse. We've made no progress. In fact, I think we've gone backwards as a country. I think our youth are just ravaged by substance abuse. There's so many drugs in the country, it's unbelievable. But you didn't, not one of you mentioned Kinako, so I take it it's a failed project, and you all agree with that. No, Kimojo, whatever. Kinako. Kimojo, yeah, I'm fine, thanks, sorry. See, even I've forgotten what it's called. But the fact is, you didn't even mention it, so I take it that you're scrapping that. But can you give us more detail on how you intend to reach children and have more prevention programs? You talked about having more prevention programs, but you didn't say how. You didn't mention any targets, how many children you want to reach, where you're going to reach them. So if you can unpack that, please. And as far as food security for poor households are concerned, I think you mentioned 200,000 households somewhere in the presentation. Can you, how are these households identified? And is it just food parcels, or are you empowering people to grow their own food to some degree? I know they can't grow everything, only, you know, but are you providing them with seeds and that to have some form of sustainability themselves? Then on the establishment of the Inspectorate for Social Security, you said it's going to be up and running by 2015. I'd like to know why so long, why it's taken so long, because I believe it should have been up and running already, if I remember correctly. And just give some, I haven't been on the committee for a while, as you know, so maybe some background would be beneficial to me. But also about the integrity of the chair, the Social Security system through SARS, and I know SARS is coming. But the DG is ultimately responsible for SASA. And the fact that only 20% of the staff have been vetted, according to a parliamentary question I received yesterday from the minister. So 80% of the staff at SASA have not been vetted. I'm not saying they all, or even the majority, even a small percentage, are corrupt. Don't get me wrong. But the fact is there could be corrupt elements there. And I'd like to know why, before someone is not employed in SASA, or anywhere, in fact, that's a sensitive area, that they're not vetted as a matter of course before their employment is confirmed. Why employ people, allow them to corrupt the system, and then vet them years later and find out when hundreds of millions have been stolen? And if you remember, DG, when SASA was first established, I think 2005, 2006, I called for all the staff to be vetted then. Still hasn't been done. So what's happening about that? What plans do you have in mind or in place to get all the staff, and by what date can we have that done? Then on slide 29, you talked about the new policy for financial awards. And I believe this is from the court case in the Free State, eh? That you have to come up with a new financial awards plan. Have you consulted the NGO sector in this regard, or was it unilateral? And if you could just unpack that, because I believe the court judgment said you had to consult the NGO sector. So what kind of consultation took place in this regard? Where are we? The ECG centres are great. The Child Protection Register. What cooperation do you have with the Department of Justice with their Sexual Offences Register? Do you link up? Because, Mr. Chair, I think it is a duplication. I mean, I support the principle, and I did support the principle of the register when we dealt with the Children's Act. But the fact is we have two registers. I know our register is more than sexual offences. But what are you doing to join up? So if someone appears in the Justice's Sexual Offences Register, that they automatically come into our register. And then you say that 4,000 employees working with children are screened. Does that mean it's incorrect grammar? Have they been screened, or are they about to be screened? And when you say 4,000 employees, in which field exactly? Are they teachers? Are they people working in sports facilities, scouts, you know, brownies, whatever? If you can just let us know. The substance abuse. You say you want, on slide 36, you want to reduce the incidence of substance abuse in communities. By what percentage do you want to reduce it? There's no target there at all. It's just a broad stroke. Nice to have, I must admit, sentence, but we'd like to see some targets. Slide 39, you talk about 100 change agents. What are change agents? I don't know what they are. How they identified, and who determines where they get placed, in which 100 wards? I believe they're going to 100 wards, so what exactly? Which 100 wards will they be sent to? And then, Craig, on 43, it's the last one, Chair. On slide 143, you say create 187,000 work opportunities. Now, that sounds a lot. I mean, I take it it's not permanent jobs, or I might be wrong, pleasantly wrong. But if you could unpack that and explain, is it 187,000 day jobs? So it's each day you count as a work opportunity? Or is it a week? Or what is it exactly? And in what field? I mean, 187,000 work opportunities is a lot. So if you can please explain to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Most of my concerns have been covered by previous speakers. Chairperson, sometimes back the department reported that huge amounts of monies were paid to SIU, and they were coming up with a program or some sort of innovative policy and strategy to cut the expenses on that and reduce fraud and corruption drastically. And they have actually, in the last presentation that I was present, have done so. Perhaps maybe you could indicate to us as to what is the success level of your synchronization of dealing with fraud, where you have the fingerprints that comes up on other departments that is linked to yours. Is it assisting the department maximally? Sorry, Chair. I'm missing most of the ones that have been covered. The baseline allocations. The model that is directed towards the youth empowerment, your programs on that aspect. You did indicate that not much has been reached and done. And these are one of the prime areas that the President has alluded to in the State of the Nation address. Perhaps you could just tell us what is the challenges and how you're going to provide those. Is there any outside funding? You did indicate that you have constraints in terms of budget cuts. Is there any other money that's coming from any other source that can assist in balancing your equation? Chair, you did indicate that SAFA is going to be coming, but I don't know whether it's the prerogative of the National Department with regard to the national tender that SAFA was awarded. Is that in order, Chair? Yes. Okay, no, fine. I would draw that one. Yes, the capital assets. Are you happy that the various centres, particularly those that are placed in the rural, you know, are you quite happy in your inspection as to they are equipped, fully equipped in terms of IT? I might have some reservations on my visit to rural areas that there is a lack of infrastructure based on your IT. What is your strategy in ensuring that you get a complete audit and you speak to the problems? Yes, I'm very much concerned about, you place a lot of emphasis on the rights of people. But quite often you find that the certain structures are not there to disseminate this kind of information, particularly to rural areas where they can correctly and lawfully engage in their rights. What is your communication message? You know, it's all good to say we have the structure to deal with the human rights aspect, but when you go down to grassroots, people are questioning, what is this? So I think the knowledge industry is important. What is your plan of action there? Chair, the other one I want to ask is your 360 social crime. What is the relationship between them and your sector policing and your community policing? You know, is it linked or is it isolated? I'm not going to touch on the policy imperatives and the various issues, but I think the issue of food security and your strategy or your guidelines, because when you refer to food security, and if you go out to the rural components, particularly where there's visible poverty, what you'd find is that you might have this social relief, and it might just take people for a month or two, and then your budgets are in hell of a constraint. So whilst it might look very good that you want to deal with food, yes, thank you, Che. The intention is good, but when you get down to the reality, that's where the challenges are. I'm not going to address the issue of the widows and the widowers grants because I'm quite sure that is going to be pushed in policy directive. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much. Can we go to... Can I ask Honorable Bula a question?
Who
the chair? Who you? I just want to ask Honorable Bula if when he's talking about the widow, is he talking about the wife of a leader? I don't think you need to answer that. That's fine, Honorable Member Bula. Honorable Member Waters?
One question about foster grants I forgot to ask. May I ask it? Thank you. On slide 32, you mentioned the increase in the number of children accessing foster grants by 10%. Now, the figures I've seen is about 1.5 million children that are being looked after by a family member, but only 500,000 are entitled to foster, or only 500,000 obtain foster grants at the moment. And there's about 1 million children that don't receive it. And I know there's a court ruling that I think suspended the Children's Act, as far as this is concerned, and went back to the Child Support Act provisions of reviewing and accessing foster grants. I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but you can tell me. But what is happening with regards to ensuring that the other million, I know you've got 10% here, but that's a small fraction. What is happening with regards to the other million children accessing foster grants that should be receiving it, that are living with one or other relative, because the mother or the mom and dad have passed away due to HIV mainly? Thank you. Thanks, Jim.
You spoke about auditing ECD in the country over 2 years. You correct me, Chair, if I'm wrong, whether this is happening every financial year, where you do the auditing of ECD in all province. But my question is around, it is interested to know each province, you know, the number of, if you have that information, because it is really necessary to know the areas where we have more of these children. Thank you.
Can we go go to the slide around the GSD priorities, please? Yeah. If you look at the strategic priorities, promoting early childhood development, ECD, expanding sorry, child and youth care services, anti-substance abuse, and the provision of food to poor households. That's slide 15, honorable members. I think it's excellent priority. It is issues that are there in the public domain that really need attention. Now, what I want to know, when it comes to early childhood development, DJ, is in terms of the subsidies, the subsidy per child in the provinces, because Department of Social Development does not make subsidies available, it happens in the provinces. And what is, have you attained consensus around the payment of subsidy per child per day in these ECD centers throughout the country? If you could give us an indication, what's the progress in that regard? How far you are with infirmity? And then when it comes to anti-substance abuse, to the strategic objective there is to reduce the incidence of substance abuse in communities by providing treatment and prevention services. I'm sure everyone, especially the members, are very excited about that because that was always one of our concerns as a committee. But to tell you that the Central Drug Authority has not tabled the strategic or the annual performance plan in Parliament. So I don't think they even have come back to us on the results of the drug lab tests on certain drugs that we've requested from them. So in that regard, we are not really happy with the Central Drug Authority's performance. Especially in terms of their responsibility in reporting to Parliament and tabling the documents on time. We want to know who are those provinces that are not submitting the information with regard to the mini drug master plan to the CDA. Because that was the explanation they gave us last time to say that provinces are not responding on time with information so they can compile the reports to Parliament. Now, that is uncalled for. We would like to have information because if that's the case, we will have to consider the committee to summon those provinces to the portfolio committee. I think the fact that this is and this is a priority is very good. The issue of Kimoja, I'm fine without drugs, is actually very, very alive on the whole in the waters in provinces. It's not rolled out to every school in the country, but it is very much alive in provinces. And I think maybe what we can do, since we are going on oversight, we can go to some of these sites. It's actually amazing the kind of work that they are doing in terms of leadership development in schools. The other issue, the provision of food to poor households, I'm sure, refresh my memory with the policy development around social relief of distress? Could they still... That policy document is still in the pipeline and the bill. I think that's very important. You're very quiet in your presentation on international work, although I see on page 13 of the strategic plan, the annual performance plan of the department, it is there. And when I look at the strategic, the financial year under review that we're discussing now, which is 2012-2013, your medium-term targets, it says participation in multilateral institutions, and that's it. But there's no specifics. So if you look at 2011-2012, you really had, you were more specific. So if you could just give clarity to us about that. The fact that you, in 2011-2012, supported UN programs, there's nothing under your targets for 2012-2030. Does that mean, emphatically, that the Department of Social Development will not be supporting UN programs because it is not reflected in your annual performance plan? Also, in terms of your participation in three international organizations, that is ISSA, Social Services, IFA, International Federation for Aging, and I know that at ISSA you are an executive member, but there is nothing under your medium-term targets in your annual performance plan. So if you could please just give us clarity of that. Yes, I'm sure our outlet, Mr. Webster, will come back, will give us the breakdown in terms of gender, in terms of all the, in terms of your SMS. If you, in your response to the questions of members, give clarity on the role of social development vis-a-vis the role of province. If you look at the GSD strategic priorities, these are also the priorities for the social development sector. So it's not just for the National Department of Social Development, but also for the departments in the provinces. And if you could just give a final analysis around those issues, I'm sure it will also give members a lot of clarity in terms of your, in terms of the questions that they've asked. I think that's very important. Let me stop there. Otherwise, we'll keep here for the whole day.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. A sizable number of questions have been posed. And when I look around the room, I can see my managers are eager to speak on some of them. Which gives me this challenge of deciding whose thunder I'm going to steal. But perhaps let me, if it's okay, Madam Chair, can we start with Mr. Webster providing us feedback on the pertinent question on the gender breakdown?
Chairperson and members of the committee, on level 16. It's the DG, it's fully male representative. Level 15, DDG level, 25% women representativity. Level 14, it's 48% women representativity. And level 13 is 49% women representativity. There's a total of 105 senior management posts. In the department.
Can you repeat that again, please, because you were a bit fast for us.
Okay. Level 15, which is chief director level, 25% women representativity. DDG, that's level 15. Level 14, which is chief director level, it's 48%. Level 13, which is director level, is 49%. The target for government is 50%. That target has been set by cabinet.
Thank you very much, Mr. Webster, which means since your is your target. You've got 47 male, 47 female, and 53 male, which means you're short of the target. So, can you also respond to that question? When are you going to achieve your 50% target of female representation at SMS level? I'm sure you can also respond to that when you respond to the questions.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair. With regard to the meeting of the target of gender parity at SMS level, it is a goal that we always strive to achieve. Very recently, we undertook what is called organizational realignment, which exercise was concluded nearly 3 weeks ago, and the minister has now approved a new structure, which now must still be approved by the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Once that is done, all the new posts that have to be filled, we will make a conscious effort that this issue of gender representativity is taken seriously into account. I cannot say, Madam Chair, whether by the end of this financial year or the next financial year we would have done so. But what I can commit is that we should be able to demonstrate or provide information on demonstrable progress by the end of this financial year. It is always an endeavor that we don't wish to fail on. So we will keep the committee updated as we fill the posts that are vacant at the present time, as we interact on various matters, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the specific questions that I thought perhaps I should speak to, and then I'll come to some later once my colleagues have spoken. There are specific questions raised. The first question that I would like to deal with is the one raised by Honourable Member Waters with regard to the establishment of the inspectorate, because there's no representation from that section of the department here today. Indeed, when the Social Assistance Act was passed, Chapter 4 of the Act provided for the establishment of an inspectorate. But since that time, we had never received any special allocation for the establishment of this inspectorate. Even as late as last year, we didn't have any allocation from the National Treasury for the establishment of this inspectorate. The figures that you've seen being displayed in this presentation are the very first allocations we've received with regard to the establishment of the inspectorate. What we did in the course of the current financial year was to reprioritize certain areas to make some resources available for the work to start in earnest. But for it to be done on a large scale, we needed the kind of resources which have now been injected into the allocations over the MTF. And on that basis, we should be able to make much faster progress than we've been able to register at this stage. With regard to the policy on financial awards, I know Dr. Mabetta might want to speak to this one specifically, but I would like to say that the court case in the Free State came long after the National Department had already started with the process of revising the policy on financial awards to deal with the inadequacies that we ourselves observed in the policy. Some of those resonate with some of the concerns raised by NGOs in the case before the court in the Free State. There are some issues that continue to bedevil this environment of financing of activities that are undertaken by non-governmental organizations, especially statutory services. On the one hand, non-governmental organizations believe that they are doing what is statutory services, which is the responsibility of government, and that they would like to have 100% funding for that. At the same time, government is aware of the fact that, indeed, without NGOs, these services would be difficult to render to communities. But while that is true, it is equally true that non-governmental organizations do not depend only on the state for financial support in order to render these services. And there's an ongoing debate about whether it's going to be 100% or it's going to be a percent less than that, and then how NGOs will deal with the shortfall. And that is the debate that is now has been raised sharply before the courts. But if you like, perhaps in the future we can discuss the details of the policy on financial awards with regard to what considerations are we proposing, which is a plan we've already placed before the court, which deals with two levels, essentially. The one level is a policy intervention in respect of emerging non-governmental organizations, especially your community-based organizations, and a policy intervention in respect of established non-governmental organizations, how we need to respond to those in relation to their needs for financial needs for them to render services. Of course, part of the challenge we have is that non-governmental organizations, whilst they insist on 100% funding from governments, at the same time they refuse to disclose how much money they are receiving from elsewhere, which creates the difficulty that we could be funding activities that are already funded from elsewhere, and that as government we wouldn't be so careless as to throw taxpayers' money in that way to non-governmental organizations without getting full accountability for what is the size of the purse. But of course, non-governmental organizations believe that money is raised by them from elsewhere is money that they're entitled to, and it's money that they are not obliged to disclose to government. And that's one of the tension points in the litigation before the court at present. Madam Chair, I can see that most of the questions that are being raised, I've got managers who I'm sure are eager to speak to them now, and then I'll come back once there are those that have fallen through the cracks, and then I'll deal with them more specifically. Anyone can step in. Thanks.
Chair and members and the DG. I'm going to be responding to questions that relate to community development that the members have raised. The first one is the question that seeks to understand how many community development practitioners we have in the country. We have got 1,973. The details of which could be provided if needed. That is throughout the whole country. There was a question in terms of the training of the 500 CDPs, training of 1,500. Chairperson, I think you realize that as we introduce new policies, we introduce new approaches of dealing with issues within communities, a need will arise that those community development practitioners or those that are in provinces need to be exposed to the new approach. For example, we realize that the networking organization in the country that has got a lot of NGOs that falls within it need to be trained, refreshed on what does the NPO Act entails, its governance. Also, the existing community development practitioners, time and again, need to be trained on new approach. There's a new toolkit that we have, which is a process on how to develop communities. So we, time and again, our role is to capacitate them or to train them to bring up to the level which they understand. Those are not new members. It's the existing members that are there within communities. Those are that are there, which each year we train them. There was a question on what is change agents, whether these are new cohort of workers. When you look in terms of the community development approaches, several times the community development approach doesn't bear its fruit because communities are developed and the CDP will leave and the people go back to what they are. So one of the approaches is to appoint member of the community when you are doing household profiling, community profiling, you assign some of the members to take charge of the issues that were raised within communities. What we have realized recently when we were doing community profiling and dialogues, when you leave issues like substance abuse, nobody takes charge. We go back, everybody goes back. So you take a cohort. If it's a youth, you take youth per section in the areas where they live and you appoint them and we call them those change agents. We sit down with them and train them in terms of how they need to deal with that so that they can establish community forums where they come and report. You don't want everybody to come and report on a periodically when you come back. So those change agents are the people that we focus on so that periodically they report, they give feedback. For example, one of the issues in the community policy forum, you will have one person who is responsible for that. That will report back into the during the community forums that you have. So we call those change agents. They are members of the communities that are assigned to take responsibility for their communities. There was a question on the issue of food for all, food security. Chairperson, this is a very big problem that we have in the country. One of the things that the question was, how do you get these people that need to get food? There are many approaches that we have. One of them is the when you do community profiling, you will then identify the household that I need. And actually, it's very amazing that you realize you get even the kids that are hungry within the communities. We also use the state South African database that indicate the pockets of poverty and malnutrition. We also use Department of Health data that indicated for us that there are 21 districts that are seriously affected by severe malnutrition. We use those data. And we then do what we call, from the community development point of view, active search. This is something we have learned from Brazil from 3 years back, that we will need through our community mobilization, community profiling, search for people that are in need of food. And then you use strategies that are available, SRD and others. The preliminary issues that we get is that there's a lot that there's a lot of poverty outside, and I think our relationship with Department of Agriculture, Health, and Rural Development is helping us to deal with that. The approach that needs to be taken is not food parcels, because in terms of the policy, 6 months, maximum of 6 months food parcels be given. We are beginning to say we need to have a sustainable approach of developing communities, wherein if in those communities, together with agriculture, we find that there are women that can plow food gardens or food vegetables, we will establish those through DTI, the cooperatives, and we will ensure that those food are the ones that will be used to feed those communities. But it's a long toll that we still have to deal with that. But together with agriculture, health, and related department, we are dealing with those issues comprehensively, not only focusing on food parcels, which is a short relief, but looking at a long-term answers. I think I've answered all the questions that I need to answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members of the Committee. Thank you to the Director General. Some responses to some of the questions for now. The first one dealing with the challenge of access to a social grant in the event that a caregiver may not have a birth certificate for the child. I think it's somehow unfortunately slipped out of our collective consciousness that we dealt with this matter a few years ago, in which respect we changed the regulations to provide for people without the necessary registration documents to submit their applications to SASSA. SASSA will process it and make the grant available while it continues to work with the Department of Home Affairs to make sure that the document is made available to children. And it may appear that we may need to remind probably even our own officials about this change in the provisions to allow for access to the grant. There was a question in respect of, and I'm sorry, I've made notes on all the questions, so I need to find the specific social security ones. The one on the SRD, this bill, as well as the policy, really required extensive consultation given the implications that it would have institutionally on provinces. In fact, one of our established, one of the things we ascertained is that when SASSA shifted, all provinces who had structures for SRD either in part transferred it or abolished those structures, so much so that if the bill were to be passed by Parliament tomorrow, there won't be structures in provinces to implement the social relief of distress. So there's been a discussion, Chair, and I suppose we may need to come back to the committee at some point, but indications are now that SASSA may very well be better equipped to proceed with the implementation as it is provided for in the current Social Assistance Act. So there's been a reconsideration of the devolution of the function. But we should nevertheless, even if it remains within the national sphere of government, we will need to come to Parliament in respect of consolidating the Fundraising Act and the other funds that currently exist, such as the Refugee Relief Fund, etc. The question in respect of the need perhaps to have more money available for disaster mitigation and risk prevention, I'd like to indicate that government last year, as well as in the new financial year, has made millions of rands, and I believe it's more than 100 million rand, in fact, available to COPTA, who has the responsibility to deal with disaster management, disaster prevention. Our role of social development is in respect of relief provision, and the Treasury has thought it fit to make this amount of money available so that we train our own officials within provincial departments and within SASSA to help communities towards a state of readiness, and or when disasters do occur, that communities are made aware of how they can access our social relief of distress or other necessary funds. The foster care question, yes, it is. It remains the fastest growing benefit, indicating the need, therefore, children to access, or at least the caregivers of these children to access the benefit. But if we have 1.5 million children, as indicated, potentially in need of care and vulnerable, then the responsibility, though, is still on the prospective foster parents to go through court processes and or apply for the grant. We currently acknowledge there's a backlog of about 20,000 within the justice system, and that is a challenge. But we can only process applications where such applications are submitted, and it may very well be that many of these children, at least the caregivers, have decided not to apply for it. Although we have challenges, I'd like to think that we are working that away, and that we do not have hundreds of thousands of people presenting to us a case for access. But that's one part of the question, Chair. The other part is that we are currently busy with a review of the policy for foster care. The original intention of foster care was to place a child within a family environment on a temporary basis for 2 to 3 years, but the demographics of the country and the extent of poverty has changed such that there is a need to look at alternative forms of providing social security for children who may be adopted or who may be placed with families. That study and its recommendations will be made available within the next month, as the investigation will by then be concluded. Probably a brief one in respect of the international question, DJ. I'm sure that you want to deal with it more holistically. But we continue to serve within ISSA and play a very constructive contributory role with the Director General as a chair of a subcommittee called the BRICS subcommittee. And I'm in part speaking on behalf of the department, so please forgive me. There are a range of other initiatives, Chair, and policy investigations that we continue to do, and or new work that we do that we have decided not to put within the limited space available within the strategic plan, and that relates to a range of other social security policy initiatives. There is a view that we may want to stick to the key priority areas and hence the omission thereof. But I would also want to indicate we continue to coordinate the liaison office on behalf of the International Social Security in Southern Africa, and it's part of work that we'll continue to do for the next 3 years. Let me at this point thank you and perhaps ponder on some of the other questions while my colleagues take over.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. I will deal with most of the welfare services questions. The first one that I'll deal with here is on the ECD subsidies per child, as whether we have come to a consensus with the provinces on ensuring that there's parity as far as the subsidies are concerned. I would say yes, we have. I think the minister and MECs have agreed that it should be 15 rand per child per day from the next financial year. However, as the CFO has presented, we have challenges as far as the funds are concerned, because the expectation was that the funds that we have bidded for from Treasury will be available in the next financial year from 2012-13. Now those funds are only available from 2013-14 onwards. So this issue still being discussed, and with this MINMEC this week, we will hear what the MECs are saying about that, about those challenges. As far as the treatment centers are concerned in the country, their availability, yes, it is true, we don't have treatment centers in all the provinces. The province that has got most of the treatment centers is Western Cape, which has got 17, Gauteng has got 14, Mpumalanga 4, Eastern Cape 4, Northwest 2, KZN is 6, Free State 1. Northern Cape doesn't have a registered one because we still have no board there, and it's not the department. There are issues with no board. The department has not registered it as yet.
and then we have Limpopo and Northern Cape. In accordance to the Program of Action on Anti-Substance Abuse, which we developed last year after the Anti-Substance Summit, it was agreed that there must be at least one, you know, in these provinces that do not have treatment centers, they should be budgeting for the establishment of treatment centers. This is basically Limpopo and Northern Cape. And those that have got less have to make sure that they increase, especially in provinces where substance abuse is more prevalent than in other provinces. The big cities, I think, are a target here. The chairperson asked a question about the CDAs, when is it going to table its annual report. I think it's the annual report and, of course, the annual plan. I'm not very certain about the annual plan because they've done that as requested by the portfolio committee in the past. But do the annual report, there were delays. I'll not say the delays were mainly from the province where caused
the
by
order,
the...
We're asking about the strategic plan and the annual performance plan of the CDA.
Okay.
Yes, they tabled the annual
report
so they weren't in compliance anyway.
Okay.
So now, even if they table it now, they won't be in compliance, but at least they've tabled it.
Yeah.
So, that is why we're asking the question, when will they be tabling the performance plan and the strategic plan?
Okay, all right. We will convey that message to them and maybe make an appointment with the portfolio committee that they come specifically to table their strategic plan. Then, I think Mr. Nechipali dealt with the training. The training that you are doing on the accreditation system, the policy on the accreditation of the diversion system for as per the Child Justice Act, and we need to train the probation officers and the social workers that are working with children. So this is mainly targeting professionals rather than people working at the CBO level. I think at a later stage we will have a training that targets the people who work in the within the structures of the CBOs. The scholarships, there was a question as whether they are evenly distributed among all the provinces. The allocation of the scholarship per student is mainly informed by the first year students that qualify for the scholarship. That will vary from province to province, but in cases where we have a large number of students to consider and we cannot consider all of them, we do try to spread the numbers, you know, throughout the country. We say to if we, for example, are only going to take 1,000 students that year, we'll say to the provinces, you know, the larger provinces will have more than 100, and then the smaller provinces to the small. We spread it in accordance to the population, because we are very much aware of the fact that the population of the provinces are not the same. There are provinces with the larger, for example, Eastern Cape, KZN, and Gauteng. They need more social workers than any other province. There was also a question on ECD with regards to the norms and standards, is whether we have the norms and standards and whether we've got a curriculum and working with the Department of Basic Education in that regard. We do have the norms and standards, which are linked to the Children's Act, but we're fully aware that those norms and standards are not adequate because we developed those norms and standards without having done an audit. And of
most important is the NAMSA standard as far as infrastructure is concerned. We know we've got various types of sites that where children, you know, attend ECD in maybe state of the art buildings, especially those that are provided by municipalities. But there are other ECD sites that leave much to be desired. And so we're looking at coming up with NAMSA standards on infrastructure, affordable NAMSA standards. And that's why we need to do an audit to look at what is available out there and how can we normalize the situation to make sure that children, even if they're in formal settlement, they do have access to good quality ECD, including the environment in which the ECD services are offered. We are developing a curriculum with the Department of Basic Education. We hope that by the end of this financial year, we'll have that curriculum. We have to check with Basic Education as how far they are. At the moment, we are using what we call national standards. Instead of their curriculum, there are national standards that are implemented by ECD sites instead of their curriculum. On Kemoja, Kemoja has been evaluated at the moment. And after the evaluation, we look at what are the gaps and strengthen the program. But the Department of Education has got a responsibility for the provision of anti-substance abuse in the schools. But the Department of Social Development and the police were...
You don't have your phones on your desk or on you. It's on. Okay. Could the officials please check your telephones because it's having an impact on the quality of the sound.
Okay. Sorry, Chair. We were using them to get more information from the office, but we have to my call. As I said, the Department of Education, in accordance to the Anti-Substance Program of Action, they do have a responsibility to provide programs in schools, anti-substance program in schools. But we are working with them together with the Department of the Police to provide such programs in schools. But there are life skills programs as well that are provided to young people in schools that should include anti-substance abuse. The content should include anti-substance abuse programs. The baseline. Yeah, I know we were discussing this in the department that we will have done research to be able to understand the baseline. At the moment, we know generally substance abuse levels are very high in the country, but we do not have statistically, except for the researches that have been done in the year 2000-2004, which indicates the levels of alcohol abuse in the country. For example, 37% of the people are said to be, you know, alcoholics in the country or drinking on a regular basis. And also the levels of the intake of other drugs in the country. We do have those statistics, but they're all statistics. We need to have new statistics. But with a target, because the provinces have to set targets, we could not set those targets at national without the provinces. We're still waiting for the provinces to submit their plans of action, which are aligned with the national anti-substance abuse program of action. We hope we'll be getting those soon. The DG has addressed the questions with regard to the police on financial hours. I just want to add by saying we will have further consultations with the NGOs on this because we've been receiving quite a number of inputs on how we can improve the policy. And this has been agreed in the department that we should open it up for further discussion with the NGO. So we'll have those meetings during the course of this year and the course of the next financial year. With regards to the Child Protection Register, we do cooperate with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. There's a synergy there because we share the same database as far as people who have been convicted with regards to having committed crimes against children, you know, sexual, especially the pedophiles and sexual offences against children. You should remember, members, that the Child Protection Register, which is managed by the department, does not deal with sexual offences also only against children, but it deals with other offences that a person could have, you know, committed against a child. For example, severe maltreatment like physical abuse and cases such as murder and severe cases of maltreatment of children, which of course includes sexual offences against children. So we do, you know, align, you know, our database with justice where it's necessary, but where it's not, we use our own information from various sources. Who have been screened against the register? It's mainly from ECD sites. We've got submissions of names from ECD sites, from the NGOs that are working with children. And I think this is just a beginning because the register started operating fully last year, and we still have to engage with the Department of Basic Education because even the teachers have to be get registered. Have to be screened against that register. The social crime prevention strategy is whether we, on the strategy we're working, implementation of the strategy we're working with other departments. We do work with the Department of the Police, the Department of Justice, Correctional Services, and education. This is mainly in regard with the implementation of the Child Justice Act, and we do this within the JCPS class. Okay, I think the foster care grant, Mr. Jehoma responded to that. The ECD, there was a question on, I didn't get the question correctly, whether it was the number of children per province who are attending ECD. Okay. I do have that information. That question was asked last time, so I brought the information along. I'll give it to the secretariat. Okay.
Madam, just 1 moment. I can see my other colleagues are very eager to deal with some of the questions, but there are specific questions that I know that there's nobody to deal them with other than myself. Honourable Member Waters asked a question about SASA staff and vetting. Of course, he proceeded from the premise that the DG is ultimately responsible, which in law is not quite correct, but nonetheless, I will deal with that question. 80% of SASA staff is still not vetted, and this is a process that ought to have happened some years ago. That is quite correct. What is, of course, Honourable Member's question says that people must be vetted before they are employed, and that's perhaps where I would like to start. The bulk of the SASA staff are people who were already in the employ of provincial departments. So their employment in SASA was a consequence of a transfer of businesses of going concern from provincial departments who were then responsible for the administration of social assistance to SASA. A sizable number of people who've entered SASA directly have in fact been subjected to the vetting process. One of the biggest challenges that not only SASSA faces, but various departments of government, is the capacity of the state security agency to deal with the demand for the numbers of people who require vetting, and the amount of time it takes to vet a single person. Madam Chair, if I might just share some information here, that the security vetting form is a sizable document which contains information of a whole lot of people who must be contacted. The State Security Agency does that work very diligently, but if it does it as diligently as it does mean that for a single case, it takes a lot of time. And the resources in the State Security Agency are not limitless. So, and if you look at nearly 36 national departments of government, I'm now excluding provincial departments throughout the country, you will find that there are real constraints with how quickly the State Security Agency can actually turn around the vetting process. So there are specific cases that are being prioritized, especially people who at a senior level who are being employed in areas that are sensitive. That those are, in fact, being specifically prioritized. I believe that the CEO of SASSA may be in a better position to give us information on people who have been recently recruited, the areas in which they are being employed, whether sensitive or not, and whether, in fact, security vetting has been done in respect of them. Yes, Madam Chair.
I think government has a national information system policy, which then looks at, I think it's NIST, if I'm correct. Yes, and then you, because you have your levels of vetting, your levels of security clearance, and you mustn't confuse it with the issue when people are employed by government. You do the checking because your application form for positions in government makes provision for you to disclose your whether you have a criminal record or not. And then it's the employer will have to do some checks on the references and also on the issue around the criminal records. But if you're going to vet everyone in a particular department, what levels are you looking at? And I think that is where this policy comes in of government. And I think you should formulate also your response in that context, because it's also a policy response coupled with the responsibilities of a particular department. If you look at a department like the National Intelligence Agency, obviously everyone will have to be vetted, but they will have levels of security clearance, which is linked with vet, which is an integral part of vetting, isn't it, sir? Because you can't have just be vetted because for the sake of vetting. You need to get a security clearance. So it depends on the nature of the work. And I think that should also be a contained new response, especially linked with a policy that every department should adhere to, and also in terms of your security plan that you have for your department.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. You're quite correct, which is the point I thought I was concluding on. Perhaps I've been less articulate in expressing it, that the CEO of SASSA would then give us specific detail, because it's not only the level of seniority, but more than the delicacy of the area of responsibility. In SASSA, for an example, the majority of people who work in areas that are more delicate are very junior people. These are people who interact with applicants of social grants rather than managers who do other management responsibilities. So the CEO of SASSA would be best placed to indicate what numbers, for an example, of the 20%, perhaps let me put it this way. How many of the people who are in areas that are sensitive form part of the 20%? Because as the chairperson quite correctly points out, not everybody necessarily needs to be subjected to the same level of security vetting. For other people, it would be sufficient to do a background check. For others, it would be necessary to do a security clearance, which ranges from top secret at the highest level, coming down to secret, confidential, and the like. So that is what I will convey to the CEO of SASA, so that when she does come in here, we need to be ready with that information of the different levels of security clearance required and what has been obtained thus far. Madam Chair, Honourable Member Waters also asked a question about the Food for All program with specific reference to how are we going to identify the households, the 200,000 households. I'm not certain if Mr. Netibali has dealt with that question specifically. If he did, then I shouldn't repeat that question. But I might just add to it that malnutrition is an important indicator of poverty, and that's primarily going to be the indicator we will be pursuing in this regard, and that we'll be working with the Department of Health, which is a department that has data on instances of malnutrition that people have presented with in their health facilities, and that's the information we are using at the present time to follow that. There was also a question about the 187,000 work opportunities. We've been asked to unpack this. Perhaps I should start off by saying that indeed these are not long-term permanent jobs. These are work opportunities. They range from anything from 6 months to 12 months and the like, depending on which areas of employment these are related to. But this 187,000 jobs is not what the Department of Social Development on its own promises. This is the social sector of government. We have a responsibility as the Department of Social Development to coordinate the social sector plan of the Expanded Public Works program. And these work opportunities will be derived from initiatives such as early childhood development, where we are going to extend sites, as indicated in this plan. We are hoping to expand by 10%. In so doing, we'll then create work opportunities in that we will train ECD practitioners to make sure that those sites that now have additional children, that we have practitioners to support them. The other area is home community-based care. And I might just say that actually in these two areas, although we hesitate to say that they are permanent, by all accounts, people who are placed on learnerships for ECD and home community-based care, once they have completed that program, they are in fact going to be there for a very long time to come because the services they render continue to be in need. Early childhood development continues to be in need. If anything, we are expanding rather than decreasing. Home community-based care is a need that that remains there and I'm sure will remain with us for some time to come, as and when people fall sick. The other areas of expansion for the social sector include mass participation in sports. This refers to specific sporting codes that have been identified where coaches are going to be specifically recruited. And this is, of course, going to be led by the Department of Sports and Recreation, working together with the Department of Basic Education, because the platform for expansion is going to be based on the school sports program, where our schools are going to be centers where excellence in sport is also engendered, and for us to achieve excellence We need coaches for various sporting codes. The other area is the Karigood Mass Literacy Program, also linked to the Department of Basic Education. These are the areas that will account for the 187,000 work opportunities we're talking about. And as to the length of time, it depends on which learnership it is that these jobs are associated with. As for ECD and home community-based care, we're talking about learnership that range between 18 months and 24 months. So that does provide a greater stability. This is different from the Community Works Program, which is administered by the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which looks at a job guarantee scheme based on, I think, the Indian model, which guarantees participants a certain number of days in a year. So it is different from that. Madam Chair, I'll pause. I know that my colleagues, Mr. Jehoma, wanted to.
You dealt with a question.
One quickly, and again, Chair and May, there'll be a need to raise it with SASA when they do present. But the question that the Honourable Member Mula asked is, what is the success level of data comparison? And the member referred to the use of fingerprints. I thought that it's important perhaps to indicate that the fingerprinting process of verification or validation of the identity of a person is only done at pay points so far, and these happen in all the provinces. But going forward, the intention is to extend it to have SASA officials who work with the processing of applications for them to access their computers through fingerprinting instead of using passwords that have been abused. The other area in which data comparisons are used, of course, is when SASA compares data of beneficiaries on the grant system with that of the payroll. The SIU has done it in respect of comparing data of people on SOCPEN with those who pay their taxes. But comparisons are done with the Department of Home Affairs, Department of Labor. So it's used extensively, but they can go into that detail. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just maybe to cover some of the questions. There was a question on the targets, just by 2013. Just to clarify that, basically, this does not necessarily mean just that all the delivery will take place by the end of the year. I think the delivery period is between April and March. If you go into the APP, we have a section that basically breaks down these annual targets into quarterly targets, what would be the deliverables per quarter. But also, I think we were quite mindful on the strategic objective. We do mention that some of the objectives will be delivered over a period of 3 years, but we just wanted to zoom into the things that have to be done at least for the year that we were looking at. Maybe just to also touch on the responsibility for national versus provincial, the general response to that is that national is largely responsible for policy directives in areas where we feel that we need to tackle matters of national interest, such as ECD and so forth, would use policy to direct our counterparts at the provincial level. But also legislation and program development, as well as monitoring and evaluation around that. We work very closely with provinces as we develop the sector priorities. We use our forums such as Heads of Social Development, and at the minister level, NMAX meet on a regular basis to discuss this. Increasingly, I think we're looking at the issue of policy implementation support as it relates to the priorities. Hence, you would have noticed that some of the targets, they are zooming down into your communities, your municipalities, and the ward level. I think this is our attempt to say that delivery takes place there, and as national, we cannot stand on the fence with policy and delivery happens elsewhere. We need to begin to take responsibility of what happens at the local government level. The idea would be eventually to have a sector plan, you know, where it's a joint plan between municipality, national and provincial. We can agree on the targets, performance indicators and so forth. I think that would be helpful. It would deal with a distinct responsibility of national, which is policy, but also begin to problematize the delivery, service delivery chain that we need to deal with. But also I think some of the guiding or planning documents to this effect are your service delivery agreements that are linked to the performance agreements of various ministers, which outlines what the target areas are. So we also fit in that space and see as it relates to our responsibility, what do we need to do. Let me just touch on the issue of communication maybe as well. The issue of rights, overemphasis on the rights. I think this is part of our core responsibility to make sure that we provide for the rights that the Constitution talks about. And the basic, the entry point there is through the legislation and policy developments and program developments that we focus on. But beyond that, we have also taken an interest to increase our communication budget, you know, to begin to deal with communication issues using the traditional mediums such as radio, TV, and your paper-based. So we have taken notice that that space needs to be dealt with. Beyond that, we have also created a feedback loop as part of the structures and processes that we would want to put in place, taking DSD to people. October month are some of the you know, the feedback loops that we have created to see to it that the rights of the people, whether it's people with disabilities or the persons, actually realized. I thought I should maybe mention on that. Maybe lastly, on the question of you know, targets, I've mentioned that we're undertaking a comprehensive study on the state of welfare services in the country. Amongst other things, we want to really establish proper baseline information so that we can support our targets set in our APPs.
Chair, there was a question on the, I think, Honourable Member Bula on the assets and infrastructure. I think the question is broad in a sense because it cuts across the core services of the department, which are rendered not only by provinces but also by the agency as well. There will be probably answers from SASA's side, but I know for sure that it's one of the priority areas SASA has been dealing with, especially the conditions of infrastructure and pay points. But when it comes to us as social development as well, we have negotiated successfully with Treasury for some allocation to develop an infrastructure plan, which will look not only for us as national, but also across all the provinces. There are very serious, I would say, what is the term that we used, the most dire situation where local offices are in need of attention. We've set aside money to do audits of those as well as implement urgent interventions. So I think we have had some in KZN, some in the Eastern Cape, where we really needed to intervene. I think when you mentioned the IT, it was also not only IT, there were services where there was a challenge of us complying with the SAFE, what do you call the legislation? Occupational Health and Safety Act, where electricity wires were cutting across the informal offices, prefabricated offices. We've attended to those emergent situations. But that overall infrastructure plan is going to assist us as a sector to identify all the priority areas. While that process is running parallel, SASA is also dealing with the issues of pay points as well as their own local offices as well, because it's a joint plan. I think this touches also on the whole issue of human rights as well, because we have
been looking at how the department or the sector generally is providing the services. We have a unit now dedicated to look into this matter, which is a customer care unit in the department. And some of the interventions that SASSA is busy with relate to a joint partnership I know they had with non-governmental organizations that are having a keen interest in the services we provide. I know, for instance, there was an arrangement we had when I was still at SASSA with the organizations like Black Sash, where they were monitoring these issues at each and every service center for SASSA in terms of compliance with PACHA and so on. So we're pretty much aware of those. And lastly, there is a project that National Department is driving called STEMS, which is looking at the Management Information System for Social Development, which is driven by our IT unit. And we've started that. Some of the provinces have already implemented those IT solutions, but it's still at a developmental stage, as I say, as of now. But it will assist the sector also to have data that it can utilize to monitor effectively the efficiencies and challenges, if any, with regard to range of services that we are providing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me conclude on the more pertinent question you've raised about our international engagement. Mr. Chihoma has touched on that a little bit. perhaps I should admit up front that perhaps we've been less elegant in expressing our international relations work in this APP. What is set out here doesn't represent the totality of our international engagement. It simply speaks to additional plans that we have for this year. That would have to be overlaid over existing arrangements that we have, existing bilateral agreements we have with countries. On page 13 of the APP, we do give some indication as to what agreements we expect to have finalized this year. We expect agreements to be finalized in the first quarter with the Mountain Kingdom of Lesotho and Jamaica. In the second quarter, we expect to finalize agreements with Swaziland and Botswana. In the third quarter, we would like to finalize agreements with Ghana and Australia. And, of course, in the midst of this, we will be continuing our engagements with countries with which we already have agreements. Those would include countries like Cuba, Mexico, and a whole range of Brazil, and a number of India, and a number of other countries. But perhaps, Madam Chair, I should admit that we haven't maybe presented a representative picture in the APP, and that's the point you were making, and we accept that. Some of the detail that we don't have here, we will work into our operational plans, and in our quarterly reports to you, Madam Chair, and the committee, we'll then make sure that information is specifically shared. And if, Madam Chair, you would wish that you would wish to have sight of our operational plans in relation to this area, we can also make those available for you to see and make comments. I do recall specifically the engagement we had the last time we were here about international relations, that we still have the responsibility, working together with the committee, to identify areas of collaboration, but also opportunities for the committee to interact with some of the players that we interact with in order to allow direct access to information by the committee rather than only depending on us for that information. So we are mindful of that, Madam Chair. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, honorable members and DJ and team. We've come to the end of our meeting. Thank you very much for the response. I'm sure we've noted the issue that you raised. We still have to finalize our report on international relations, also with regard to the strategic positioning of the committee. So we take what you've said, we've noted what you've said. But thank you very much for coming. Thank you very much, honorable members, the meeting is adjourned. Tea outside, and I'm sure there's also refreshments inside.